You're listening to The God Journey, a place where people thinking outside the box of organized religion can share thoughts and conversation along the journey. Here are your hosts and fellow travelers, Wayne Jacobson and Brad Cummings.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. Well, you came in pretty chipper today, Brad.
Well,
new milestone in your life?
Yeah, my car, as I was coming over the hill from my neck of the woods to yours, my car ticked that 100,000-mile marker. I figured there should be some kind of fanfare. I was expecting to win some kind of war because I was there to see it. I saw it. I knew it. I went, ooh, and it was right by Olson Road, but nothing really came of it. But I was all excited, and then I realized, oh, the value of my car just went down greatly.
So you were expecting a band or what?
Well, I guess the 100,000 customer or something like that. I figured I should have won something.
Oh, you know what? Most of us have rolled over 100,000, and we got nothing either.
All my other cars have. I just missed it when they did. I was here. I was alert. I was present. I was going like,
You were in the moment?
I was in that moment. And
I
know
maybe that's the reward itself.
I think it has no spiritual significance whatsoever, but it was one of those things like for a moment I had a sense of anticipation, and then nothing came.
Well, I could give you something free I got up at Macworld.
That's right. You were expoing it.
Oh, I went up to San Francisco to take a look at the latest new Mac products. I'm telling you what, this iPod thing is getting to be a big deal. It's almost taken over the whole convention.
I got to say, Wayne is sitting in a stylish black T-shirt that says iPodcast.
Oh, and it's really cute.
So,
yeah.
But you didn't get me one.
No, I thought about it, but the joy of it was the conversations with some old friends. We kind of meet at Mac Expo every year and do a little talking. From different parts of our past journeys in the Lord together. So that's always a lot of fun. And then got to ride home with a brother from down here. So we had 6 hours of conversation in the car at nearly close to midnight on a Friday.
You love traffic, don't you?
Actually, we got in by 11, so it wasn't too bad. But I don't like that driving thing. It's just too long.
Well, hey, the forum is taking off quite a bit.
I'm loving the forum. It's a lot of fun. For those of you who don't know, a couple weeks ago, we opened up a bulletin board on our website so that people can respond to the podcasts and respond to each other more directly. And it's getting a lot of play.
Yeah, well, it's fun to just sort of march my way through the discussions and seeing there's just a lot of wisdom there. So, you know, we're not going to be able to address it all, but we figured we've done a couple of shows and we've had just a ton of feedback, so we figured we'd kind of walk our way through some of that.
Yeah, and our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation. I think the forum probably better than the blog and better than our comment line, which we haven't had anything on the comment line for about a month, so I think we're going to stop paying for that thing at some point, and we'll just use the forums because that makes more sense.
That works. I like Hayden's comment. He said, just two real guys talking about life. I figured that's a nice tagline.
That might be a new tagline on the website. Hayden, thanks. If that's communicating, that's fabulous because that's about all we're hoping for here is that people get that sense. Robin from Washington said, was listening last night to Learning to Listen. And say that 3 times real fast. No, I don't think so. Once will be enough. Oh, man, that blessed me. I could really relate to what you and Brad said about the still small voice of God continually leading and speaking and suggesting. But, yeah, I saw that principle happening. It takes an ear to really tune into God, and then presto, he's there. There's so much noise in this world, even the natural. No wonder we need a good tuner to hear a still small voice. Boy, that whole podcast on learning to listen has really kind of hit a nerve with a lot of folks.
Being able to recognize and have confidence in over time that, you know what, you are in a dialogue with God, I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God, because then it's like, wait a minute, I'm not just trying to apply principles, but I'm actually enjoying a relationship. And so I think that's something where a lot of people, we're going to cover more and more on that whole topic, but that's where a lot of people are really wanting to grow.
And as am I, and I think you are too. I mean, gee.
Yeah.
Wanting to have a greater sense of that conversation and carry it through the day and watch how God just drops in things as part of our day. Sometimes people to call, sometimes a way to respond to someone, sometimes a question to ask that really then takes you. I mean, so many of those things, one little thing God might put in your heart is like, you know, finding a little rabbit trail you can kind of chase down for a while because things kind of pile up on things. And
well, I was having a conversation with a friend just yesterday, and he was kind of asking me, he says, how do you kind of keep all these things in balance? And, you know, when I looked at him, I kind of said,
what things?
there was just a lot. I mean, a lot of
like
life.
Your four soccer games you coached this weekend, and your three basketball games, and your 18 team photos. And
it was two team photos, two basketball games, and four soccer games. And yes, I was exhausted and stayed in bed most of Monday morning. But no, he was talking about just the whole pursuit of life and you know, trying to discern work. I think he was largely asking questions out of our God and Mammon podcast. But I kind of told him, I asked him the same questions. I said, what things are you talking about keeping in balance? I said, because to me, there's only one real central thing. Either I am or I am not in a dialogue with God. I don't know how to just apply principles and experience the kind of life that Jesus was talking about.
I get the same question between the podcast, the Jake book, the Lifestream site, the Bridge Builders work. How do you even get through a day? A lot of people ask me, how do you even know, like, today you're going to give time to this or that? And I say, it really is for me as simple as waking up that morning and saying, okay, what's on my heart? What do I feel like God wants me to focus on or head out into today? And I don't know that with absolute certainty. But I certainly don't mind following what's on my heart and seeing if it turns out to be fruitful. If it doesn't, if I'm trying to work on something with the another chapter of the Jake book, which we're finally done with it, so we're not working on chapters anymore, but we are rewriting. But whether it's that or working on body life or trying to catch up with email, because my email is always backed up more than I want it to be, there really is a sense of this seems fruitful now, this go here, this do that. And I kind of wander that through a day. And it, for me, the type A guy I used to be, you know, with the 5-year plans and I'm booked 6 years out and even every day, you know, 2 hours to this, 4 hours to that. I've got schedules somewhere in here, made little colored diagrams for every hour of the day and what it would go to. I'm so far from that now and not even interested in that. It amazes me how much God has changed the way Wayne used to plot and plan and scheme, and none of that ever being incredibly fruitful, to now just following my heart, following that sense of what he's got there as he and I enjoy this dialogue every day. That's changed my life.
Yeah, and I think I responded to the question that was asked of me. I said, you know, at the end of the day, I do have to look for the reality measure of fruit.
Exactly.
If what I'm giving myself to, it's like I don't need to, quote, say I'm right. I heard God. See, I'm right.
Yeah.
It's more like, you know what? There's nobody to impress. There's no group to try to get to march up this mountain. There's a sense of just going like, if I'm going to be fruitful and spend the time that I have wisely, then the truth is I have to constantly be looking to say, Lord, are the earmarks that you are with me in this present for me to see and discern? Because if all of a sudden they're not, I've learned to just kind of like, okay, at that moment I'm just going to stop and then try to re-engage in that dialogue with him I'm pretty sure you didn't abandon me, but did I take a left turn where I shouldn't have? Help reorient me in terms of what you've put on my plate to do.
And isn't it fun to do that without all the guilt or performance demands that, boy, I've got to get this right at every moment or God's going to be upset at me? Rather than, no, this is a father and a son learning to go on this walk together. And when we get sidetracked at times, God's not upset about that. He's just inviting us back. So I love being able to get through seasons in my life and look back and say, has that been fruitful? Has that been worth doing? Has that been, and not have all the overlays of performance and did I get everything right? Because I don't ever get everything right.
My dad and I were talking about the whole process of learning to listen and the time that it takes to develop a confidence and being able to discern. And, you know, he's sort of on the front end of finally agreeing doctrinally that that's not a crazy idea, but that may be part of normal Christianity. I mean, we grew up in a tradition where, you know, the thought of hearing God's voice is like, I'm not so sure that that's safe. You know, the Bible's been written and the canon's closed. And I just, you know, he said, you know, Brett, how do you know? I said, Dad, I said, I've been focused on this for the last 10, 12 years of asking God to be a part of my decision making just about every single day. I said, it is a confidence that has been developed over time. It didn't just all of a sudden bing happen and I got this new gift.
Right.
It's the fact that there's a track record of being able to just go, Lord, I'm asking you to help me make these decisions. I don't want to do this by myself. I'm not trying to navigate just by principles. I need a little, I need a lot of the sense of the intimacy of this dialogue. And I said, first, it starts with the freedom to be wrong. And, you know, some are weightier issues that I don't want to be wrong on, and they're greater consequences. But If I'm afraid to engage in the question asking of, hey, God, you know, where should it go? And then having the courage to actually decide whether there was a sense of a leaning of my heart one in one direction or another. I say it's just the track record of time that I look back and I go, like, gosh, more often than not, it looks like God was part of that dialogue.
And I like the freedom not to be spooky. You know, everybody talks about hearing God's voice. I mean, that's where axe murderers get started and all kinds of things. And so
God told me to chop his head
off. Yeah, that God told me stuff has got a pretty bad reputation in the culture and pretty bad among Christians, because a lot of times people, you know, God told me this, and it's very arrogant. It's usually, as we said in the podcast, God tells me what you should be doing, and then if you don't do it, and it usually involves you giving me some kind of money. That's how it usually works. So that ties us right into the God Mammon Show. But, you know, I do think that it's gotten a really bad rap. It's real spooky to people. You know, you sit in a room and, you know, you wait for the lights to come on by themselves and then a voice to come out of the closet. And, you know, this conversation we're talking about is just so much simpler than that. It just isn't laced with, I mean, it can be at moments very supernatural. And I don't ever want to say that it can't be. But for the most part, in most of our journeys and most of our days, it's the simplicity of just sensing what God's putting in our heart, being free enough to follow, to find out if it's him or not. If it's not, you can back up and make what apologies you need to and fix what you need to fix and go on. But I like the whole idea of getting the demystifying this thing so it's not a spooky kind of thing. Wayne, one of our listeners, too, is a different Wayne than me. I liked what he wrote here. He said, I came to a point where I've been deceived by so many voices in my life that I couldn't trust any of them. Well, haven't you been there?
Yeah.
I mean, how many of us have not done things? Oh, we're certain God called us to do this. I think Wayne has the, not this Wayne, me Wayne, has a marvelous
I'm
ability.
I'm getting confused.
My inner voice can disguise itself as God a lot. And I think in my younger days, there were many things that I could just swear, God's really put this on my heart. I had nothing to do with God. It had everything to do about me. And it was just Wayne cloaking himself in God's voice. And I think this is part of the journey. And and that's why the fruitfulness things come in handy. You do some things, you find out that's not helpful to you. It's not helpful to others. So maybe this is only Wayne's agenda is God's voice. So he says, I gave up basically on God in confusion, bewilderment, and despair. And I'm sure there are others who are listening in who would say, yeah, me too. Until that is, he spoke to me for what I believe was the first time. Now, I don't know if that's true. I think God's always speaking. But, boy, the first time you know it, the first time you hear something outside yourself and you just say, you know what, I know that's God. He said, I knew instantly it was him and no other. And my life has not been the same since. As you mentioned, the process of learning to discern and recognize his voice very much aligns itself with the relationship itself. Where the relationship goes, so goes the capacity to recognize the voice of the shepherd. And I love that. You cannot separate trying to discern and have this conversation from a larger relationship of experiencing his life and experiencing his love every day.
There is really a value in having a community of folks that you're kind of living your life with and inviting their feedback and their relationship. You know, it's interesting. Sometimes when you're sitting in so many services, it is a little bit of a challenge to hear God's voice to you. Because I think you become victim of so many other agendas. And it's not that God isn't talking to those people.
Right.
But one of the things I had to learn in recognizing how does God function with this body is he as the head is sending signals to just about every part of the body, but he's not telling all of us to do the same thing.
Yep.
You know, sometimes he brings us to task together, but a lot of times sitting in so many services – I think I became the victim of a lot of other people's words from God. He was talking to them, and then they were then saying, now we all must, and I'm just going like, I'm not so sure. And so, if, you know, one of the values of sort of just being able to kind of quiet yourself a little bit on the side is I don't think Jesus is incessantly demanding I do a bunch of stuff.
Right.
That was one of the hardest things for me in this season of my life is I felt like God said, now, Brad, you know what? I want you to just simply spend more time with me in the place of simple friendship.
Yep.
And I had been used to so much religious activity. It was hard to just kind of be still.
And yet, look at when we get together with our family, or I get together with my adult children now. Your kids are still younger, but when we had a good weekend with our kids hanging around a bit and my new granddaughter and when my kids come over, we're not sitting around saying, okay, this is what we should do. Let's do this, do that. You know, it's not that. Maybe when they were younger, it was pick up your room and brush your teeth. But now it's just the joy of what are you going through? What are you experiencing? What makes you laugh? What makes you cry? And the kinds of conversations and laughter. I mean, laughter is so much a part of the Jacobson household when we're together, my son and son-in-law and daughter. I tell you, it's scary sometimes, and my wife, too. She gets in there with her little licks, but I tell you, it's great fun. And the relationship with God is all – I love what you said there. It's not always about tasking. It's not about, I got this, you got to go do this. But it's the fruitfulness of a relationship that begins to shape my security in Him. And His love and grace functioning in me that sets my heart at rest in His presence and allows Him to unravel some things in me that just the friendship itself accomplishes.
When this is rooted and grounded in the fact that this is an unfolding friendship, I think anyone who's struggling to try to, you know, can I hear the voice of God? It's almost as if you're struggling over a skill that when you just focus on friendship, it's not a challenging skill.
No.
If you're focusing on that, I need that skill. It's like, well, it becomes a little bit elusive. I mean, it, you know, let me just tell a little chipper story that's relevant.
Yeah,
you don't have to hack up a hairball.
I might.
But it was funny. The other day, Chipper all of a sudden got out of the house. And that's not a dangerous thing. He's an inside out, outside cat. But when it starts to get dark, he can become quickly become coyote meat, you know? And so it's like when he gets out, you're just going like,
hey, we're the end, by the way.
It will stop. My children will revolt. But when I tried to reach out, somehow his collar slipped off. And you're just going like, okay, my cat outside with his collar on and a phone number is not a problem because then if he gets picked up, he can be brought back. My cat without a collar looks like a stray. Just go like, oh, no. And so it was funny.
And it chews easier without the collar.
Yeah. You're terrible.
It's a cat, man. So I'm not into cats.
In the midst of this, I just said, Chipper. And I didn't do it. But it was interesting. All of a sudden, he stopped and he laid down much like a good dog would respond. I've never seen a cat do this. He stopped.
These stories go beyond believability
no,
for me.
No, no.
I think every week you make up a chipper story.
No, I don't. This was marvelous. He stopped.
Yeah.
And he laid down.
Yeah.
And then I was able to go to him. I was able to put his collar on. And then he followed my voice back in. Now, you got to realize, I then turned around to the rest of the family. And I, you know, it's like I just scored a touchdown because Chipper responds most to everyone else. I'm the guy he has a little bit of a challenge with.
Yeah.
But guess what? What's happening is I've recognized he and I are no longer strangers. You know, I think by the inordinate amount of stories of Chipper, you might think I'm this profound cat lover. I used to be a cat punter. I used to be the guy that
punter.
Says, yeah, listen.
You go outside and call the coyote.
Yeah,
coyote!
Let's go see if we can't run over a cat. And somehow this cat
we will get letters.
This cat has changed my heart a little bit because I've recognized in the context, if I don't spend any time him getting used to my voice, the reality is we're still strangers. But the more that we have had interactions, the more familiar with my voice he's becoming. I just know a lot of times when you're trying to discern God's voice, people that don't have much of a conversation with him in the first place, they're not spending a lot of time unfolding their heart to God because, well, they don't think he's listening. Unlike normal cats, he's not a reluctant responder. Okay. You know, Chipper's a little bit of a reluctant responder. The analogy breaks down. But with God, I've recognized there's a sense that the more familiar we become in the context of relationship, the less of a challenge it is in terms of, quote, being able to hear him.
I don't know if God minds being compared to a cat. I'm thinking he probably does. I'm thinking he's real upset right now.
I don't think he's offended by that. You are, but I don't think he is.
Well, he might be.
We had some other really interesting feedback.
Before we get to that, though, I wanted to grab in one sentence here. This came from somebody called themselves PGC Friend, which is kind of bizarre, but kind of goes into we're going to get to some other things.
I'm not sure what that is.
I'm not sure either. I like names like Bob and Sam and Bill. But one of the things he was talking about, just being outside of more traditionalized structures, one of the things that's really helped him in learning to listen and what we just talked about, he said he says, I've learned to listen more with confidence to the Holy Spirit. And I think this is because when he speaks, I do not have a lot of replay of messages I've heard in services or Christian media. And I think part of that bandwidth of noise and, you know, scripture says this is the way you should be thinking. When you have a lot of that input in your life, I do think it is hard to hear. I think it's just a great statement. And when you get away from all that bandwidth of, and probably not just Christian media and not just sermons and lectures and teachings and podcasts, but even the amount of media we get from Hollywood and other things. And, you know, the iPod thing. Everybody's got, you know, white earphones now in their ears all the time. yeah, come to the quiet. There are times you just got to get away from all that stuff. God, I find, at least for me, God's in the quiet. God's in the moment away from all that stuff. For me, I have a hard time even these days having a significant time with God at my desk because there's 75 things here screaming for my attention. For me, I got to get away. I got to go in the other room or go for a walk or go somewhere to just allow that mind to get out of all the other things vying for its attention today.
Coaching sports, in the basketball gym, when you got two games going on simultaneously for these younger guys, and you got all
balls
the
pounding,
balls
and
pounding,
whistles and,
everyone's yelling. Yeah. You know, here I am as the coach of my team trying to direct my players. And, you know, in the noise of what's going on, it's a miracle that these little guys can even hear my voice different from all the noise. Yeah. And I think that's it's always been a helpful analogy for me of recognizing it's like I've got to, in the midst of the noise of life, find a way to discern the distinctness of the voice of my coach, kind of trying to direct my play. And when I do, man, life goes well. We score some points. It's all good.
We've heard a lot from the God and Mammon podcast, too, that we're not going to have time to talk about today. A lot on the blog, not so much on the forums yet. We're trying to get people to move from the blogs to the forum, and we even got some help.
DJP is forcing people.
The blog monitor out there.
Thank you. He's the blog lifeguard. Get out of the pool.
We're happy to have you post in either place. So if you want to post on the blog, do it there. But the forum does give opportunity for others to interact. You can actually see when others are actually online with you. You can actually send instant messages to people who are also online with you at the time. So, and there's also a new Frapper map, I guess somebody started. So if you're listening,
and
to
it's
Gardening,
not a cafe drink. It's a map. It tells you where people are.
It's another attempt by Google to take over the planet. But it is.
Oh, is it?
It is. It is a map where you
Why
can.
Why they give me a pink flag? I don't,
you know,
like
what?
That.
I think Marty might have done that.
Uh oh. Marty, I do apologize. I called Marty a guy. It's a lady, and I am so sorry.
The eye should have given it away if it was with a Y. You thought it was spinning Marty, probably, from growing up. No, that was me growing up spinning Marty.
I just liked the content, and I wasn't paying all that much attention.
Anyway,
just thought there was some great stuff
if
there.
If you go to there's a link on the website. If you go there and actually sign in with your zip code or country or city, actually post a little pin on a map so you can kind of get a feel for where all the listeners are.
We had some neat feedback to the just last podcast about the angst between innies and outies. And that was a neat tagline by Wynn. It was about
cute.
Belly buttons, I think.
No, it wasn't.
One of these is, more often than not, there seems to be a misdirected anger in those having or are being set free from the matrix of religion, no matter what the flavor might have been, to condemn what failed them, i.e. the institutional church. And I do think that's one of the things that gets in the way. It's like when people are coming out of a system, they're frustrated with what happened to them, and it seems like you can get lost in spending a lot of time of sort of just voicing that angst.
Well, I think part of the problem, when you're raised in a particularly a conformity-based religious system, let's say it that way, so it's not all traditional congregations
right.
that are not like this, but a conformity-based religious system, everything is measured by right and wrong, isn't it?
Yeah.
From the time you're very young, everything, there's a right way and there's a wrong way. And I do think when people start to shake free of that, the starting point really is this right or wrong? And many people, before they can find whatever courage or desperation to finally walk out of something that they think is being very harmful to them, they have to judge it as wrong and what I'm doing is right. And I think that leads to this kind of angst and anger that, yeah, I think a very natural, it was for me. As I began to break free of some of this stuff, I was angry at what people had done to me. And so, yeah, anger was a big part of this. And I think it still is. I think it is for people who are breaking free because we've got the context of it's only right or wrong is the only way we can think. And I think as God leads us out of that, there's a sense now of not just right or wrong as I determine it.
Right.
But how do I live in what God's asking me to do? And if it's to be there, be there. If it's to not be there, don't be there. But I don't have to judge people who don't see or do what I see or do as wrong. That's a great freedom. And somehow in God pulling the plug on our anger, I think he does get down to, okay, now stop worrying about are these people right or wrong. Start thinking about what I'm asking you to do and how it is that I want to love you. And when our relationship to me, what really unplugs the anger, did in my life, is when God becomes so real in just how I live each day, I no longer worried about people who wanted to do it differently or did do it differently. It wasn't my bailiwick. It wasn't mine to get mad and throw rocks. I found great peace in just saying, oh, this is so real that if I alone lived this way, I still would. I wouldn't go back.
To some degree, when you're in the midst of the whole system, everything, it does seem like there's a whole lot of spiritual temperature taking. You know, is that a good meeting or not? I mean, it's like, and so there's a lot of this like commentating and commentary on how good or not good we thought something was. And when the reality is when the relationship with God takes center stage in terms of your satisfaction, out the door goes all the need to sort of assess everyone else and critique everything else.
And that's a great freedom, isn't it?
Oh, it's profound.
I think that's the amazing thing, because even you let other people be different places in the journey, because it's not – I know people get panicked. The big byword now is relativism. Everybody does what's right in their own eyes. And we're not talking about that. We're talking about God has a right way about everything. But the process of our discovery about that isn't because this is the only right way. And God leads us through various things. And so I can be with people who are different parts of the growth process. They probably don't know some things I know in some areas. And they probably know some things I don't know in other areas. And I think this freedom to not have to be right or wrong and judge everybody else's right or wrong is to really say this process is in God's hands. And what's really important is not do we agree on A or B, but are we loving the same Father? And if we are, then he's going to drag us through even our theological differences to some greater display of truth as we walk with him and walk with each other in a way that makes sense.
The freedom to recognize that this is a growth process. You know, there were things that I thought when I was much younger that I held as sincere convictions that, you know, today I'd go like, oh, ugh, I can't believe that's exactly what I thought. And yet, at the time, it's where I was. And God didn't reject me because I didn't have all my theological T's crossed or my ideological I's properly dotted. He accepted me where I was, and he brought me, and is continuing to bring me on a journey. And I think when you begin to recognize that, there is a freedom and an ease of accepting people which makes conversations with them far easier, far more enjoyable,
exactly.
And I think far more fruitful. Because it's like, look, I can learn from just about anybody.
And Jesus demonstrated that in the incarnation, didn't he? When he came, he didn't come and start the conversation where he was.
Right.
He started the conversation where Zacchaeus was, where the woman at the well was. I mean, he finds us where we are and begins the conversation that, yes, will take us into the fullness of his truth. But if you start there, if you start in what you think you know that and someone else is doing wrong, nothing helpful ever happens.
Yeah. This person that we sort of opened up with said, I find it funny that some want to attack Barna over this book.
Yeah, this is Jay Jackson from Texas.
I have read several reviews that do just that. Barna's just reporting the numbers, and like it or not, his numbers are sound. Attacking Barna is like attacking the sports announcer when your team doesn't win.
Boy, believe me, there'd be a lot of announcers dead after this last weekend of football in America. Some highly expected teams got killed this weekend, so...
Well, I just think that it, you know, when you look at this, it's like, it is not an us versus them dynamic. We're, you know, I think God is trying to get us to respond to his voice. And if there's a simplicity of us embracing, you know, this is where God's asked me to function. This is how he's growing me in the context of my life. Then I don't have to throw stones at the people who are doing it differently. I don't have to say, well, they're wrong and I'm right. But I think there is a need inside of us to want to validate that. And I think that's part of where I think a lot of this stems you got to ask the question, is it enough to have confidence in the fact that I am relating to the living God and this is the relationship that I have with him?
And I think it is true that the less certain we are in ourselves, the more we need validation from the outside.
Yeah.
So even those that are campaigning the most for the little pet doctrine or the little pet theology usually are the most insecure about that thing, because when you know you've latched onto something that's true, then your focus is not getting people to agree with me so I feel validated.
Yeah.
But how do I help people open to a different idea? And believe me, attacking people rarely opens doors, you know?
You think?
Police get to kick them open, but we don't. At the end of that, Jay asked, he said, what are some of the other books you guys are reading? How about Megashift or something by Viola? Would love to hear your take on these. Reading anything lately, Brad?
Yeah, there's actually Irwin McManus wrote a book called The Barbarian Way, and it, you know, I don't know that it's a phenomenal book. I've enjoyed aspects of it, and I think the nice thing is there's just a refreshing look at the fact that, you know, this thing isn't all just so clean and cut and wonderful, and the fact that there's some raw desire to just be outside all of the conformity is what I've taken away from that. I've enjoyed that one.
Have you read Megashift?
I haven't.
I haven't either. Heard a lot about it. Haven't seen it. Viola, Edwards, some of those folks. Yeah, I've read some of those books in the past, and some of them I enjoyed very much, even though there's a lot of these authors that you can say, gosh, some of their books are incredible. They really open your eyes to see some things outside, but they don't live it so well. And the practice of these things, when you hear about it or talk to people that had firsthand experience with it, you just kind of back off and say, you know, you got to keep eating the chicken, tossing the bones. You got to keep doing that. I thought Viola's book, Who's Your Covering, was fabulous. He's written a number of years ago. It's a fabulous book on demystifying that whole thing of I've got to have a leader to be my covering instead of let Jesus be my covering. So there's some fabulous stuff out there. I'm not really reading anything right now on these themes.
I'm reading more screenplays, and they're not published out there. But you know what's exciting for me, though?
Yeah, I'm reading some unpublished stuff right now, too. I'm having a lot of fun with.
I think the thing that I'm really excited about is there's some real genuine creativity of people that have a hunger for making God known to the culture around us, and they're finding some just wonderful, creative, very accessible ways to do that. That, you know, when I ended up finishing a couple of these screenplays, I sat there going like, oh man, this is phenomenal, because that is the God I know.
Yeah.
And he is very accessible to our culture. And so I'm excited for, you know, stuff that is perhaps about to be published.
Yeah, me too. So we'll get to some more books and stuff up the road. We just thought the Barna's book would give us another chance to just talk about this angst between innies and outies. Dwight, on some of our general topics on the forum, started kind of a new thread on where do we go from here, which I think provides some fascinating possibilities. Just you talked about all these creative things people are doing all over the world, and folks don't often hear about it. So I think it's an interesting topic. He writes this. He says, once again, he said, I really enjoyed the latest podcast, was challenged to not let my journey turn into an us versus them. Been there, done that. Here's my question. So where do we go from here? Let me explain. I've been on this new journey for about 10 years. It's been a process of letting go to the religious obligation and turning to our Father for that relationship I long for. It has been a wonderful, freeing reality coupled with confusion and dissatisfaction. Never have I felt more healthy, and yet I am hungry for more. More of Jesus and more of the community of believers. What I'd like to probe with any of those willing is where do we go from here? Great, great topic.
When you look at all this, there's this big hunt and search, especially like in a lot of seminary settings of, you know, the next model. And it's like, you know what? I don't think there is one. I think there's a shepherd to follow. I think there's a voice to discern. And I do think that, you know, even when you look at a lot of what was coming out of Barna, it seems as if the shepherd is leading a lot of the sheep very happily outside of the traditional pen. And they're getting a chance to explore the field.
Yeah.
Eat some fresh grass as opposed to overtrodden, dirty stuff.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Some of that decompression time is probably pretty good. You know, not worry about doing something right away, getting involved in something the next day. Because, again, if my doing something validates me, it's still part of the problem. So I think there is a wonderful time. Dwight sounds like he's been through a lot of that, and I know Dwight personally. He's a good friend of mine, and I know he's really come to a healthy, healthy place in his life and experience. And I'm honestly where he is. I tell you, I have a real hunger to find ways that God, even in Moorpark, Thousand Oaks, where I live, to task together with some other believers to do what God might ask us to do to touch people around us. And I keep sharing that with everybody I know around here, believers I know, they're kind of outside the box. I keep kind of tickling that to see when others might be ready for that too. And I don't sense they are right now. So it's not something I'm pushing that I've got to get going, but I'm waiting. Because I do want some brothers and sisters in this general area would just say, what would God give us to do together? How could we equip some other folks who are hungry to live? How could we, and not just thinking in a, you know, let's start a congregation or let's start a house church. I just mean, what might God ask us to do together to experience Christian community and to make it available to other folks? And, you know, that might be to take a regular line in the soup kitchen and help serve on a Tuesday night. Or it could take any number of forms. And I don't have a preconception as to what that is yet. But I am hungry. I'm like Dwight, where to from here? And I don't mean that around the world. I just mean it locally in my own environment. Who's ready to go on this walk and listen to do some and task some things together? But not people who are just busying up some other religious activity in their life.
See,
I
think that's one of the biggest challenges is that, you know, most of the time, those people who have been asking those questions have been leading traditional things. And I think it's now time to sort of think, quote, outside the box of what we've always known. I think God does want to interact with the culture. I mean, one of the reasons, you know, as nutty as it is to be coaching as many teams as I am, God has genuinely created some freedom in my schedule. And when the requests were made of me to do this, there was a real clear sense of just saying, yeah, for now. I don't want to be this busy for right. very long, but for a little season, I'm getting a place of access into 10 or 12 different families off of each team that I would otherwise not have. There's an access point into caring for their kid, helping these little guys develop a sense of confidence and they're learning to enjoy skills and abilities and deal with wins and also with losses. There's a ton of just normal life stuff that I just sort of sense the Father saying, here's the inroads into other relationships that you otherwise wouldn't have. If I just was in a religious context of services, meetings, whatever's, yep. you know, I wouldn't relate to these people. But in these contexts, this is not perceived as that. And so it's like their guard is not up. It's completely down. Yep. And they're wondering, why are you different than some of the other guys who are just yelling at my kid?
Yeah, and I think that needs to be encouraged. I know one of the best things ever said to me when I was a pastor of a traditional congregation, an old pastor friend of mine who had been retired, and I asked him, I said, what's the most valuable piece of advice you ever got as a pastor? And he said, you know what it was? It was to always have a link to the community. And I said, what does that mean? He said, don't just be with Christian people. Find some way every week where your life is alongside people who don't think like you do. And I said, gosh, what could that be? He said, it could be Kiwanis Club. It could be Rotary. You know, all these things that most of us as Christians have taken ourselves out of. Go do something every week that puts you with unbelievers and let them see what God's doing in your life. And for us, it was right at the time when Julie was getting ready to go to kindergarten. And we were praying about homeschool, private school, public school. In that praying and seeking and talking between Sarah and I, it became really clear God wanted us to put our kids in public school in that city we were in, and he wanted us to go with them, which meant we went down to see the principal and just said, where do you need help? We're here to help. Now, principals have an unlimited number of ideas for people to do that. That was actually the genesis of what has become Bridge Builders. It was that act of obedience that intentionally put us with a group of people we wouldn't otherwise be with, and there to serve, not there to be served, there to just say, how can we help, and did some of the very menial things, you know, throwing carnivals and setting up Coke machines. I mean, just some of that stuff, but it puts you with people. I think that's the thing that's so important. We're all looking for, how do I reach the lost? And we're trying to, you know, pass out tracts at the mall or knock door to door to strangers.
Invent some kind of program to do it.
Instead of being just with them.
The best secret is the fact that, you know what, people are found in the everyday things of normal life, and that's where they're available. I think when you try to create a program to reach that, I think you're going to get some walls and some barriers or some suspicion of, well, what are you selling or what are you asking of me? The fact that I'm just involved in the lives of people and the normal things of, you know, this is what, you know, a lot of young families do. The kids are in sports. This is part of their growing up. Just being there in the midst of that with no agenda. You know, I'm not there trying to evangelize my little players. I mean, the reality is I'm trying to coach them.
Yep.
But if I'm just myself, guess what? Jesus is a massive part of my life, a big motivator of just about everything I do. So he's going to rub off. Yep. And it's going to happen in a normalcy of just life. And I think that's been the thing that I've found so refreshing.
It is freeing. As Sarah was at, when she interviewed for the job she has now as a career counselor at a local high school here, principal noticed on her resume 20 years of being a pastor's wife and involved in those things. And he looked at her and he says, I'm not going to have any trouble with you evangelizing students, am I? And I love Sarah's response. Sarah just looked at him and said, you know what? If they don't see it in my life, my words aren't going to mean much anyway.
Ooh, well said.
I think that's so true, and just the way that he's called us to live. Well, there's a whole lot of other things here we haven't gotten to, Brad. And
we're almost out of time.
But it's on the forum. You can take a look at it. I just wanted to quickly just give us a little bit from a PGC friend as he responded to Dwight initially. He said a couple of wonderful things. He'd been out of the more traditional structure since September 2003. He said, I wasn't experiencing what the Bible says that we are to experience. I came to the conclusion that the only one who was responsible for my walk with the Lord was myself, not some fivefold minister. I love that. I decided that leaving that I was going to start my walk anew and really take responsibility for it. He gives three things that he noticed became true quickly in terms of where to go from here. First of all, the first thing that changed was that condemnation stopped almost immediately. He didn't hear those condemning words and tapes and,
wow,
and tried to drive his life that way, which I think is fabulous. Another thing is that there's not been a lot of activity, which he says for him is a major miracle. He said, I tend to be task-oriented. He said his whole life's really wound down. If the Holy Spirit doesn't clearly tell him to participate in something, he doesn't. And he says, I'm still stunned by that kind of change. And there's another thing I know is a lot more confidence in the Lord to hear and follow the Holy Spirit. Now, you don't have to leave the structure for those things to happen. We're not saying that. But it's often something that does. And there's so much clutter. There's so much pressure to perform and condemnation that's a part of obligation-based systems that I think his journey, I love it. And I hope some other people kind of get on that wavelength there and talk. It's a great conversation. Where do we go from here?
Yeah, I think, you know, to some degree, stepping off the treadmill that so many people live their life on, whether you're in a system, out of a system, in something, you can be in the treadmill just about anywhere.
Yep.
And it's learning to step off that and just say, all right, God, out of the clutter of what's going on, I need some refreshing and clarity of just the simplicity of relating to you. I think as people embrace that, the way does come clear.
Thanks for traveling with us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd appreciate your questions or feedback by email or at our blog at thegodjourney.com. Or you can call 24 hours a day to our comment line at 805-626-4212.